Welcome, everyone, to GIS Chat. I am your host, Jasmine Wilson, and today I have the wonderful Sarah Thompson with us today, Geospatial Analyst Section Manager, which I definitely want to get into. But before we do, do you want to give us a little bit about your background, your history, things like that?
Yeah, for sure. And happy to be here, Jasmine. Thanks for having me on. So my name is Sarah Thompson. I'm the Geospatial Analysis Section Manager for the Arizona Department of Transportation. And I know that title is a little bit of a mouthful, but basically that means that I work in our GIS section and I work within our multimodal planning division, which is another mouthful in and of itself. But being in a large agency, it's all split up by divisions, and then the divisions have groups and the groups have sections. Yeah, Geospatial Analysis Section Manager is my title. A little bit about me. I've grown up in Arizona my whole life, so I'm kind of happy to be working for the state. And I graduated from Arizona State University with a degree in biology and a certificate in GIS, and grew up a little bit west of Phoenix. And now I live a little bit east of Phoenix, and I've just loved it and love living in this area. So hoping to spend a lot more time here.
So what is it about GIS that got you interested at first when you're at university?
I didn't initially intend to be in GIS. I just heard about it through getting my biology degree. And someone had recommended me to get a GIS certificate to help do the biology. And what initially steered me more towards GIS was trying to find a full-time biology position after graduating. I wasn't quite prepared, I don't think, for the temporary nature of the biology industry. Not saying it's a bad thing or a good thing. I just wasn't ready for that necessarily. So when I was trying to find work, I ended up finding a GIS technician position and figured, hey, you know, it is using part of the education that I got. So let me give this a try and see how that goes. And it was with an engineering consulting firm. So I was a little bit nervous about changing away from biology, but I ended up really enjoying it. And that's what set me down the path of transportation and set me down the path of GIS.
How was the roadmap post-university?
Overall, I mean, looking back on it, it seems easy in the sense that a lot of things just fell into place when I needed them to. There was some difficulty, like I mentioned, with trying to find biology work, and I was able to find a biology internship right after college. And I was really thankful to be within a research lab at my university that gave me some really unique biology experience. We were doing field work, studying freshwater ecology, doing a lot of fish sampling. So I feel like I lucked out a bit in finding an internship that was doing ecology work and native fish protection and was qualified to do that internship. After that was where I started facing some difficulties. And I, you know, like I mentioned, the seasonal position of it. So that was a summer position. After that ended, I applied to be a winter technician, is what they call it, at the same location, and didn't end up getting that first winter position. Apparently, you know, it's very competitive. So that a small setback, just one setback, but it, you know, already gives you that one feeling of, oh, I had that work experience there, and that wasn't enough to get me that next position. So that's when I got hired on as the GIS technician working in Tempe, and then thought, okay, I'll reconsider and see where things are at in a few more months. And then summer came around again, and I got in contact with those biologists again, and they had, again, another seasonal thing. And at that point, you know, I was working a full-time position. It wasn't biology, but it did seem like it had more of a promise than going towards the biology. So at that point, I think I had told them, you know, the pay wasn't what I was looking for. It's seasonal. And then in 6 months, I'm going to be in the same position and needing to find something else. So I continued on with the GIS technician and going back and forth thinking about biology and that opportunity not really falling into place multiple times. So in that sense, it was a little difficult, but finding that GIS tech job felt kind of easy. I see a lot of stories of people having to apply to hundreds of jobs, and I was really fortunate in that I applied to a couple positions, and this firm was really looking to take someone on. I got that job pretty quickly and stayed there for 2 years. And then another small set of difficulties in teaching myself or going through those first kind of tough conversations that you need to have in your first jobs of what salary do I want to have? What responsibilities am I taking on? You know, wanting to grow and take on new titles. And that was challenging. But ultimately, you know, that kind of bubbled up and led to the decision of wanting to find a new job and getting higher pay and taking on more responsibility. And making that decision was easy in the sense of knowing I've had these conversations with my employer, and now I just know I need to go somewhere else and give that a try. So that was easy, and again, kind of felt like really good timing. There was a position open at ADOT. I applied, the interview went really, really well, and I was brought onto the team. So yeah, just kind of looking back on it feels really like just a series of good timing and right spot, right time kind of thing.
I would definitely agree with you that after I had graduated, that it kind of felt like some jobs, I feel like sometimes can exploit people who just graduated from university. And I'm guessing that's kind of how you felt too.
A little bit, yeah. And, you know, there's that kind of reckoning you have to do with yourself, I think, of understanding that you do kind of have to put in your time. And yes, you are an entry-level person. You don't have the experience, but also we all need money to live. And if a bunch of responsibility put onto you and you're an important asset to the company, you do start to feel kind of taken advantage of, that they don't want to compensate you for that. So there's that internal battle of, is it right? Is it wrong? Could I be making more somewhere else? So I agree that that's often the position of recent graduates and trying to break into this GIS industry.
Definitely. So now that you work at ADOT, the Arizona Department of Transportation, so let's go a little bit more into your title.
I am a section manager, so my team is really small. I have two direct reports and one transportation intern underneath me. And being in transportation, I obviously work with roadway data. And so I do a little bit of technical work and a little bit of management work, in that I split my time coaching my staff, managing budget, writing scopes or requests for proposals, and doing some project management. But then also, as needed, if someone needs something like a data set or needs ArcGIS Online stuff made, I can hop in there and get it done. But definitely, it taking on that manager title, you do have to take a bit of a step back from the technical work. And I try to leave those moments, delegate those moments to my staff for them to shine with their technical skills.
And I know that ADOT has a lot of projects going on, from the East Valley, West Valley, Central, going to Grand Canyon. One of the biggest projects you guys are working on is the I-10. So I wanted to go a little bit more into that, because that seems like a pretty big load to take on. It's like 6 lanes, there's 2 HOV lanes. So I wanted to go a little bit more into that.
Talking about the Broadway curve construction?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can tell, you know, not having gone to school for transportation or urban planning, I mean, I do kind of feel like I moved into the right industry, because talking about these construction projects does excite me, and seeing the improvements that we're making, you know, is really exciting. So it's my position within the department is a little bit removed from that, in the sense that a lot of those projects get planned and advertised within different divisions. And then my team is in the background, or kind of way in the beginning of the project, where our responsibility is managing geospatial data about the roadway. And then our biggest responsibility is turning that in for our federal reports. And then that kind of, you know, we funnel that up to the federal government, and then that kind of shakes down in the form of funding and different things like that. In a very, very roundabout way, our work is helping those construction projects, but knowing that, you know, we don't quite get a hand in that. is an interesting thing. And then kind of on the far end of it, after the fact, they build all these assets that the department has to manage. We do come in and sometimes they need maps of the areas made, or they need to know a lot of the times about lane miles, the right-of-way area, how many signs are in the area, that sort of thing. We're doing, there was a request last year about doing a pedestrian improvement in a certain area. So then they need a big map of what are the medians like in that area. In some ways, it's fairly satisfying knowing that in some way I had like a distant hand in it. And then also realizing that that's, you know, the accomplishments of people far away from me in the division.
One thing I also like is that you have the AZ-511. And I don't know if your department tackles that as well. I would imagine they would have some hand in that. Do you want to go a bit more into that?
Sure. And that's the other interesting thing about a larger agency is that my team doesn't actually have any hand in the 511. Occasionally, we do pass them data to make their base maps. For example, when the State Route 24 extension opened over in the East Valley, there was a piece of road that was not on Google Maps yet. So we had to provide them that piece so that, you know, when crashes and closures were happening, they had a representation of that. So that's one of the things that might be kind of a challenge in a larger agency like this is it is really segregated at times with this team does this specific thing and that's not your responsibility. It's the AZ-511 tool is amazing and provides a really good service. But again, knowing that, you know, we had a background role in that, but it's not my accomplishment, but it is providing a really great service. And then seeing it as an example of, well, that's a really great tool for the public. What could my team do within our sphere that could also provide a really great resource for the public?
So far in your experience, your title currently, what are some challenges that you have seen so far in the transportation industry?
Transportation, or at least transportation for a state agency, is really all about knowing where these assets are, what do they look like right now. And then I've been working really closely with our safety team, is understanding how changing the roadway changes the safety of it. And fundamentally, you need GIS to do that. So GIS can really solve a lot of problems that these transportation agencies are facing. What improvements did we make and how did that impact safety? Or what was the cost of doing this project? There's a lot of talk about building infrastructure modeling, BIM, or basically just 3D modeling and digital as-builts and helping the process be more efficient. And instead of this process of each division has their workflow, but they don't pass it on to the next division who needs to use all that information that they created and people are starting from scratch. So I think GIS really has a big place within the transportation industry. Another challenge with that is that specifically with government work, I think there's a lot of old school mentality of, and I think it's a rightfully earned old school mentality of, we didn't need GIS to do this for the last 100 years. It's overcomplicating it, or, you know, we're managing as we are. And a lot of that mentality is changing. But then that brings you to another challenge that the transportation industry faces with. There is honestly sometimes very limited budget, very limited staff, very limited resources. So even if people are very excited and want to use GIS within their work, it ultimately comes down to either we don't know how to do that and we don't have the time or the money to implement that.
So with GIS, what would be, are you saying more or less like the tools or the applications would help with the budgeting instead of using like more employees or more people doing it the old school way? Are you saying that GIS is more cost effective?
Yeah, I think it often comes down to that, or a lot of the cases that I see people are managing these siloed spreadsheets that might not be giving them the right answers when we could have a very straightforward or seemingly straightforward GIS solution that could give them the answers that they're looking for. Things like, we have a project that's planned in this area for 6 months from now, so we shouldn't be redoing the paint on the surface of that road. And having that kind of location intelligence of what has happened, what's going to happen, just that alone would save time and save energy and resources. And kind of the way that my team and a team I work closely with, the way that we approach that is to just keep telling them the benefits of GIS and finding these smaller examples of, yeah, we know we can't do this huge GIS catalyst throughout the whole agency, but we can take it team by team and see where can we give them a small bit of GIS and they can see how much easier it makes their lives and keep doing excellent work within our team and get people excited through examples and show them that this stuff works and here's how we can do it with the resources that we have.
A lot of silos I'm finding. Just like in big organizations or big companies in general. I wish there was kind of a way to break that, because like you said, I agree that, you know, you have like an old school mentality and there are pros and cons to that. But then trying to transition people over to maybe a more newer way of doing things and probably a more effective way of doing things is a little bit tough. And then on top of, you have departments that this department knows one thing, but this other department doesn't know one thing. So then this other department is starting from scratch, but this one department actually already solved all the problems, but that department didn't tell that other department.
Exactly.
Yes, I wish there was a way to solve that.
Yeah, there's no easy way, or at least if there is an easy way, somebody tell me right now. I think a way that we try to combat that is letting people know that by sharing your data as much as possible within the agency, that makes your work easier. You can see the work that other people have done and use the information that they get to make better decisions. And we have a lot of lunch and learns and presentations that we do internally, just trying to talk about the work that we're doing and also the work that other teams are doing and making sure that people know who to talk to. That was the most challenging thing for me coming into a big agency. I don't think that's specific to transportation at all, is knowing, oh, so-and-so in this division is doing this thing, so you should talk to them about it. And I feel like now, having made a lot of those connections, I am getting those messages of, we're trying to do this thing. Can you sit in and help me be that GIS expert and tell me, help guide me on this problem? So yeah, another challenge, but just keep reaching out and sharing those ideas and sharing the projects that you're working on, I think is just the way that we're kind of tackling it right now.
Is there a project besides the I-10 curve that you are excited about that you are allowed to say?
I guess that's the big one. I mean, it's a huge project and it bleeds up into the I-17 before Flagstaff. I think I'm very excited about the implementation of flex lanes, which will be the first in our state where you will only be able to drive one direction during a certain time of the day. And they have these, or they're planning to have these automated gates that direct the flow of traffic. So that kind of thing I'm very excited about. And like I mentioned earlier, working with our safety team, learning about what kind of new safety innovations they might be implementing. So a few months back, there was, if I can nerd out on transportation, the first diverging diamond installed in our state. So just these crazy new ideas that, our transportation system is changing all the time. There's new innovations. And then the chances the public need to go out and see this change and drive on it and know that I had whatever small part I had in building that.
So two questions. Yeah. First one, what's an automatic gate?
Oh, well, I guess I shouldn't say automatic, but we have what's called the Traffic Operations Center, and they're monitoring all of the freeways all of the time. So they will have a system where they can put these gates up and down to allow cars through. And then at a certain time of day, they'll close the gate so no cars can come through it. And that will change the flow of traffic.
Neat.
Yeah. I'm really excited.
That is so cool. Oh, it's called Flex Lanes.
Flex Lanes, yeah. And they have a wonderful animated video all about it.
That is so cool. All right. I'm excited for that. Awesome. And then second question was, I'm visually thinking about I'm thinking like, I feel like we're like a Blade Runner. So, oh my God, what was my second question? My mind went to Blade Runner. Let me think.
Hopefully it's not dystopian like that.
Yeah, that would probably wouldn't be the best state to be in. Now I remember. Are you guys making moves towards chargers for electric vehicles?
Yeah, actually. So I don't know if it's published yet, or it at least we submitted the plan, but talking about electric vehicles, chargers, that is a huge topic at the Department of Transportation right now. Yeah, rest assured that we are trying to make it better. I know there's not chargers everywhere, and my team was actually able to help make some maps for that report and seeing where on our interstates, you know, do we have a gap larger than, I think, 50 miles was the areas they were looking to target, which was quite a lot within our state, but hoping to get those grants and that funding to be able to improve that electric vehicle infrastructure is definitely something that's on our mind.
Nice. So what traits do you think that you have made you successful? Are there other skills that you think that have helped you become successful in your current role?
I think one of the things in my first role as a GIS technician, my role was really to talk with the people who had purchased set up the project. They were giving us money to do this engineering survey for them, and trying to walk them through GIS and getting them to tell me, here's what roads they own, don't own, here's what they need, what they don't need. I think the skill of being able to talk to people about GIS who don't know anything about GIS, or who do know, but, you know, we're trying to use the GIS to solve a problem. Maybe that's another skill I would say that comes to mind for me that has helped me be where I am, is the skill of talking through a problem with someone and listening to all of the nuances of it and setting a timeline for it and meeting their expectations, really.
I'm going to transition now. You are part of the ERISA Vanguard Cabinet. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So the Vanguard Cabinet is a young professional board of ERISA. It's an appointed position. So we bring on around 8 new people each year. And our mission is really to just provide resources for young professionals coming into the GIS industry. So our biggest thing is we facilitate a mentoring program. We're always looking for new mentees and mentors to join that program. And we do all the matching for that. We have a kickoff meeting and facilitate the mentees and mentors accomplishing their goals. And we also make sure that at ERISA's annual conference, we have plenty of events for young professionals and sessions for young professionals to benefit from attending that conference. Another thing we also facilitate is making it easier for young professionals to attend that conference. So we have a digital competition that offers free conference registration, free ERISA membership, and a travel stipend for you to come out to the conference and present your project and network with all the other GIS professionals that are there. And then beyond that, we just work on whatever kind of ideas and passions we have and put out articles and webinars, host events, and basically try to put out to the world what we wish that we had or what we wish that we knew when we were students and new professionals. And then circling back, I will take on the role of the chair of the Vanguard Cabinet. So
nice.
I'm moving into my third year there, and October, that will be my last year with the cabinet, and I will roll off and leave it to them to continue on the vision.
I know that a lot of students post-university have the same experience to where, you know, maybe not finding something as quick, or maybe just things didn't go the way they envisioned. What would you say to them that you've learned that helped you get through that period?
I think one thing that comes to mind is a recent keynote speaker. He was talking about how GIS is, and I can't remember exactly what he said, but basically GIS is a tool for many, many different industries. And I think, I mean, I didn't quite come from this position, but a lot of us get geography degrees or GIS degrees, and then we kind of have to shoehorn ourselves or pick what industry we want to be in. And maybe it's different from the one that we wanted. So I think coming to terms with the knowledge that you can do GIS just about anywhere, and it's up to you to pick which topic makes you the most passionate. So for me, I've been really happy and excited about transportation, but I know that's not the thing for everybody. But it could be within any industry. So I think that's one part of the advice I would give is don't get too caught up on the right industry right away. Or if you're not happy, try finding a different industry to do GIS within. And then speaking more from my own experience, I think what I had to make the most peace with was not trying to force using the degree that I went to school for. I think a lot of us are in that position of we ended up in a job that isn't quite the same as what we went to school for. But knowing and realizing and working towards what's working out for you. So when I was first trying to find my jobs, it was a lot easier for me to get a GIS job. So that's what I went towards. And that's what I kept kind of doubling down into. Whereas the biology thing, you know, the pay was worse. There was no full-time work. I would have had to gone back to school and put in a lot more time and money. And in that sense, kind of talking about what was harder, what was easier, GIS was a much, much easier industry for me to break into. And ultimately, making peace with the fact that it's okay that it's easier and it's okay to move away from that thing that you kind of had an idea of originally doing and just following what's working for you and following where your passion or where your talents are, really. And if a certain path seems like it's working out for you, keep pushing on that or keep trying to find that path that works for you.
Well said. Very well said. And I want to geek a little bit more about transportation, just a little bit more as well. Because on top of the automatic gates that just, I keep thinking, Blade Runner.
They're manual. Ryan they're Gosling. Manual.
And then, you know, the EV chargers and everything else. What other ways is ADOT doing? What other things is ADOT doing to become innovative?
Let's see. Yeah, I think those are probably the two most innovative things that come to mind. But I know that we're doing studies across the state all the time and always looking for how can we make our network safer and how can we make it more efficient? Nobody likes traffic. We like it least of all. So we want to make that experience better. So our mission is to be providing the best transportation that we possibly can. So if there's an innovation and if there's an innovation, we want to try to implement that.
Definitely. Because yeah, the transportation industry is always evolving. So
I'm glad you see it
really
that way.
Cool. Yeah. And I'm so happy when I see like new pavement, new stuff on the roads. I'm so happy when I see that because
I can definitely
tell it. Like there are like definitely like certain parts of Arizona, which is so odd. There's certain roads that you can tell that were very well maintained, and there's certain ones that have not. They just have potholes everywhere. Mm-hmm. I'm actually interested. Do you have any thoughts on that?
On the potholes, I have a few thoughts. Well, I guess I could talk about how GIS could be used to solve potholes, and So I mean we had a really bad winter, so that has definitely contributed to a lot of the poor pavement that we're seeing, a lot of the potholes, but every year we have a van that goes out and surveys the pavement, and all of that data is GIS data. So we can provide maps all throughout the state on the state highway system of the condition of that pavement. And one of the things that that van can tell us is how many potholes are in that area. And that's a whole nother transportation rabbit hole of what are the definitions of a pothole, but we're not going to go there. So we can, you know, tell our engineers or our maintenance districts, there's this many potholes in your district or in this mile segment. And that helps us spend our money more efficiently. And without GIS and without this van taking surveys of the road, that's just manual survey or, you know, individual people having to report these into us. So having GIS to solve that problem helps us reduce the number of potholes much easier than we would have been able to in the past.
That's pretty cool.
Yep.
Nice. So, Sarah, before we wrap up our conversation, for anyone that's listening that wants to get into the transportation industry or is thinking about it, what are some skills that they need to have that would help them get break in?
Yeah. So I think the first thing I want to say to that is I think a lot of other professionals in the industry know that transportation is a pretty niche industry to get into. So I don't think many of us have a really high expectation of, oh, all of these transportation terms, and you're very familiar with all of the data that we need to capture. I don't think we have that expectation. I think a lot of us are flexible. And if you have that excitement and willingness to learn, you can break into the transportation industry and you can be successful in the transportation industry. But the biggest piece of advice I would give if you are really passionate about it is learn about linear referencing. To me, as a GIS student, especially just having a GIS certificate, I had no idea what linear referencing was. And that's the system that we use to manage our data rather than XY coordinates. And I know that a lot of DOTs across the country do as well. So if you can familiarize yourself with linear referencing before, you know, before you go to your interview or before you're considering going into the transportation industry, familiarize yourself with that, because there's a really good chance that you'll need to manage the data in a linear referencing system.
LRS is very important to learn if you're in the transportation industry. But awesome. That, I think, will wrap it up, Sarah. I'm so glad to have you on, and I'm so glad to hear about the Blade Runner things you have going on.
Happy to share.
Thank you. I'm your host, Jasmine Wilson. I had today Sarah Thompson with me, and we will see you guys in the next episode. Bye.